Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to today's Powered by Transova podcast. Today we have with us Cody Bailey. And Emily, I'm going to have to start off by pointing off he's an Iowa State graduate. So today you are the one that is outnumbered.
All right. I guess that's okay.
Thank you for joining us, Cody. Why don't you go ahead and get started and tell us a little bit about who you are, and how you got to be here at this point at Transova Genetics today.
You bet. Thanks for having me today. So I'm Cody Bailey. I'm originally from Southwest Iowa. I grew up on a cattle and crop farm there in Creston. Went to Iowa State, as you said. And so it's good to have Emily outnumbered here. I kind of got onto this industry through studies at Iowa State, reproduction class, and then an embryo transfer class there at Iowa State. And then I got an internship with Transova right after my undergrad. Had already decided I was going to go get a master's in animal science. So after my internship with Transova, I really knew that embryo transfer was what I wanted to do. So I got a master's at Oklahoma State and then went on to do a PhD in repro phys at LSU and then made my way back to Transova in 2014. So I worked in Northwest Iowa out of Sioux Center location for 6 years and trained and did the arm work. So transfers and oocyte collections, embryo collections, got involved in a little bit of continuous improvement R&D, helped with the internship program, which was a lot of fun. And then helped lead some of our teams and stuff. And I guess there, with our topic today, I've been involved with heavily with both beef and dairy. So a lot of beef cattle in the Dakotas, Nebraska, and in Iowa that got to work with. But also we had a lot of dairy donors there in Sioux Center, have a couple of large dairy clients that we work with. So a lot of dairy donors that I got involved with there as well. So now I live in Indianola, Iowa. I'm just south of Des Moines. Been here for about 3 years and I operate kind of remotely and I work in Southern Iowa, Northern Missouri, work a lot with our team from Chillicothe and some of our satellites here in Central and Eastern Iowa.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Cody, for getting on today with us. As you alluded to, we're going to be talking about kind of the elephant in the room when it comes to our industry of stimulation versus non-stimulation, FSH versus no FSH. Maybe, Cody, go into what that means and what are the differences between those two methods as far as setting up cows for IVF.
Sure. Yep. So there's a lot of different terminology. I tend to say no stem or non-stem kind of interchangeably, but stimulation is just using follicle stimulating hormone or commonly referred to as FSH. The product we use is Faltropin, which is an exogenous porcine pituitary derived hormone. That is the one sole product that's FDA approved in the United States for stimulating follicles and used for this process. So basically we're going to give a single or a series of FSH injections to the donor to create follicular growth in anticipation of the OPU and then utilizing those oocytes in IVF. So we have a number of different schedules from a single shot to multiple injections, different doses depending on the class and breed and age of cattle that we're working with. And then, so the no stim is simply that. It's just not utilizing any FSH drugs before the OPU. And so most of those no stim events are done. You're simply bringing your cow to the chute and then we're doing the OPU with no synchronization of cycles or follicular waves at all. And I guess one point is we're talking about IVF today and OPUs, but FSH is necessary for stimulating donors for superovulation for conventional flushing, where we can do it either way before IVF, but you have to use it for conventional flushing.
Very good information, Cody. Thanks for giving us a background on the differences between those two. You've been involved, you know, in the beef and dairy reproduction area, like you said, since your internship with Transova, and even before then with your classwork at Iowa State. Tell me, what results do you see from kind of both methods, or, you know, what have you seen in your years of experience with the FSH and non-FSH?
Yeah, you bet. So honestly, so I like to give some ranges, because on average, we evaluate our data. We got a lot of data that comes in, but, you know, in mature cows, we expect 6 to 8 embryos per donor in IVF. And there's certainly ranges outside of that, donors that do above and below that. And in open heifers, you know, 10 to 16 months of age, we're roughly half of that, 3 to 6 embryos per donor. And that's with or without stimulation. And so we evaluate production data comparing stimulation to not. So by production data, I mean all the OPUs that we do, all the fertilizations that we do in our system, we're trying to evaluate that. Now that data is kind of messy. It's not comparing apples to apples. So we do controlled side-by-side studies, and we have done that over the years, looking at FSH use. Does it help us or not? And fortunate or not, those studies have come back both ways. Sometimes we've run studies and the FSH provides either more embryos or better quality embryos. And sometimes there's no difference. And we see that stimulation really didn't pay off in that group of donors. And we've run that in heifers, different breeds, mature cows. And essentially, over all those studies, we either see no difference at all in stimulation, or we see a slight advantage with a half to an embryo more, either in absolute embryo production or in just quality embryos. And so the answer with results is it depends. It depends on the class you're working with, heifers versus mature cows, breeds, and even within breeds, it seems to depend whether or not you get an advantage from FSH or not.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a reoccurring answer today, Cody. It depends. And I think we hear that a lot on our podcast of it really comes down to the donor. How does she respond to FSH? Does she not respond? You know, I think that all kind of plays into it.
It's gray, right? I wish it were black and white, and we could just say, oh, if you have this breed or this age of donor, you use it every time, no matter what, or you don't. But it really does depend. And a lot of times we have to run donors to find out how they work one way or the other.
Yep, absolutely. And I think a common question that we get is, will Transova do both, or are we only giving FSH? That's the only thing that we require.
Yep, absolutely. Basically, we offer both. And it's basically because of what I just talked about, because we have run studies and we find that both work. You can be successful with either stimulation or a no-stim program. And we believe no two programs or no two donors are alike. So we shouldn't try to fit all donors or programs into a box and say you have to do one or the other. And so that makes it harder, because we got to figure out which one, what we need to use. But I think it makes it better for the donors and for the clients that we're trying to tailor make a program for them.
Yeah, like you said, it's not a one size fits all type approach. And, you know, it's been interesting to me, you know, just being involved in the industry, that it's different for different breeders. It's different for different individuals. You know, there's so many layers of, you know, it kind of depends answer. And like you said, we wish it was black and white too, because it'd be easier for Emily and I to market to, you know, breeders across the country with very black and white answers. But tell me, Cody, you mentioned earlier that you sometimes have to run a donor first, or you do have to run the donor first before you kind of know. How do you decide or direct, you know, a breeder on how to proceed after maybe you've done that first run?
We love to start even before then, back up and say, you know, talk with our CSRs and our production teams, our professional service teams. What are your goals? What are your goals with this donor or your group of donors? What's the plan here? You know, how many embryos do you need? How many times are you going to run? What's your budget? And what's important is maximum number of embryos from this exact sire, or is cost per embryo really, really important? You know, in the end, having those goals and us having a little bit of an idea of what the goals of the client and that donor really help us decide, do we start with no stim? Do we start with stimulation? How many times are we going to run? The more information we get on running a donor, the closer we're going to get to her ideal schedule, but we might not have that opportunity. Some donors might run once or twice per year. And so we got to kind of shoot from the hip and do the best we can to set her up for success on those first two. And so the approach, you know, all the things involved, cost per embryo, the cost of the drug and the injections. Right now, Faltropin is about 11. I think it's $11.80 a cc. And so in IVF, we're utilizing 2 to 10 cc's on depending on the schedule and the donor. And so, you know, 25 to a little over $100 for an OPU cycle. And so what I like to do is talk to the client about what's that going to cost you per embryo? What's that going to cost you per live calf? And is the slight advantage in FSH going to be worth it in that scenario? And so, and there's certainly labor associated with it, getting the donors in. There's a little bit of stress on the donor. Are your facilities good enough to get them in? If you're working 30 donors as compared to two, you know, that might help us make a decision of if it's worth the labor involved. And so, but we utilize how we pick schedules, how we pick stim versus no stim. If we don't really know about your goals, we're going to utilize history first, donor history. How did she do in the past? We're probably going to try that again. And then from there, we're basically going to start with either no stim or a very conservative dose of Faltropin approach, simply because we can always add other things down the road. We want to, you know, conserve costs, reduce costs, but also that's just been the best with our experience is start with no stim or reduced dose, and then you can add more shots, you can add more dose or more complicated schedules as you go to get the results that you want.
Absolutely. And also too, you were saying about labor. If anybody's cows are like mine and they figure out that they're getting shots multiple days in a row, that makes them not want to go in the chute again. So you have to take that into account. Cody, you know, you're talking with clients about their goals and, you know, kind of those shoot side chats that you have, and you've experienced a lot of different producers and operations. You know, when you're having these conversations with them, what are kind of the biggest misconceptions around this topic? Or what are some questions that you get all the time that you're like, man, I wish I could put this out to the masses?
Most of my chats, honestly, are usually with one arm and a cow. And so but I get a lot of common questions about stimulation and from new clients and clients that have been doing a long time and just haven't really pushed the envelope or asked the questions. And so, yeah, I think one of them is, hey, will FSH mess up my donor? I get this a lot too in heifers. Like, hey, I just have this heifer I'm really excited about. I don't want to mess her up. And there's really no information. There's no data to support what FSH use will mess up a donor or cause her to become infertile or even, you know, have increased risk associated with the OPU. The only thing that you might get into is if you happen to give too much FSH, you can overstimulate a donor and there can be some overreaction in terms of inflammatory response and stuff and create some adhesions. But of course, we're going to do everything we can to not overstimulate. We're not, like I said, we're talking about using conservative dose and that type of thing. But there's certainly risk associated with an OPU anytime you do it. But FSH doesn't add to that risk of harming the donor. Another big one is conception rate. You know, well, I've heard you have to give FSH to make embryos that'll make a pregnancy, and we've studied that, and we just haven't found that to be the case. So we have a lot of NOSTIM. I didn't mention this before, but we're probably over half of our OPUs are done without stimulation now, which is a big change over the last 5 years. But we've followed that through to pregnancies, and we've done some side-by-side studies. And once you get quality embryos that are either frozen or fresh, they perform similarly, whether they were created by oocytes or follicles that were stimulated with FSH or not. So that's a big one. And then one big one that I always like to get out in front of is, well, more is better. Like, I know that the CSR, the client service, sent me a schedule and it calls for 4 cc's, but I figured I'd give her 8 just to give her a little bit more, right? And so more is definitely not better in this situation. More FSH does not create more follicles or more oocytes. It generally just makes follicles bigger. And there's a point of diminishing return where too much can create too big of follicles. It can create some mucus and can actually be negative towards oocyte quality. And so we like to stick to the plan, stick to the schedule that was sent. And more is definitely not better. Now, giving more shots over a longer period of time can recruit more follicles and create more oocytes. But just more dose does not create more oocytes and more embryos.
What about if you don't follow your shot schedule and you don't give enough or not at the right time?
Right. And this happens, you know, oh shoot. I had it in my head that we were supposed to start shots on Monday and the schedule says Tuesday night. And so as soon as you recognize that you made an error, call your client service or Transova, and we can make plans. We can try to salvage this situation. The good thing about OPUs is and IVF, these things are pretty flexible. We've learned over the years that, you know, there's not huge differences in these schedules. So if you give 1 shot versus 4, 1 shot versus 5, or even out to 6 shots, a lot of donors, there's not a huge difference. So we can modify the schedule on the fly, and we can salvage a situation. And so, and like I said, even if you happen to not give enough and you gave half of the dose you were supposed to, well, a lot of donors perform just as well without any stimulation. So you probably are going to do just fine with that approach.
I think that's good information to have, because I think that happens probably more than people would like for it to. So it's nice to know that there's A, people to serve as a resource, but B, that it's probably not a, you know, scrap it and start over type of a scenario.
Correct. Yeah.
Cody, I found it interesting that you said that, you know, we do that many non-stimulated procedures, you know, and that's not something new that we've offered. We've kind of always offered, you know, non-stim as an option. But do you think there's been a shift in, you know, that ratio of non-stim versus stimulated over the years? Kind of what's your perspective on that? And, you know, is it due to the increase in the number of IVF procedures we're performing, or kind of give us your, you know, your opinion on that?
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift. I think there's a number of reasons why. I think in the beginning, you know, in a conventional flush, we're using, you know, like 8, 10, usually a minimum of 10 cc's. So half a bottle of FSH up to a full bottle, and sometimes even more in the old days. And so the transition of ET practitioners from mostly conventional flushing to IVF, we just used a lot more FSH, because we thought that was necessary. And also we did that because we were, the data supported medium follicles, and it still supports medium follicles. The size of the follicles creates better embryos and more embryos. We've learned that while that may be true, those small follicles still make embryos at a pretty good rate. Our IVF systems have improved over the years. So maybe FSH and more FSH in the late 90s, early 2000s was more important than it is now. So those are some of the reasons in trends why they might have gone that way. I think the other thing is, let's be honest, fulltropin's quite a bit more than it was 10 years ago. And so that cost has really influenced, can we get along with less? And we've created some studies and said, hey, yeah, we can use a little bit less and get along and get the results that we want. And then there are some of our programs that have used no stem simply because of labor, and kind of while they know and they've done their own studies, maybe that they know they're going to get a half an embryo less, they're okay with that because of the labor considerations. Because, you know, some of our clients have a donor and they have to get embryos out of that donor. So they really need embryos out of that donor. Some of our clients are working on, you know, numbers and pushing genetics forward, and they have 20 donors and they're all sisters. And so they don't necessarily need embryos out of that one donor. And so all those considerations change, you know, your plan or your approach of whether or not you should use FSH. So those are some things that have changed over the years.
Yeah, that's all good things to point out, Cody. One of the other things that you had mentioned was the price of FSH going up and down, and obviously the availability of that, because that's the only thing approved in the United States. And with that, we're kind of at the mercy of the company that makes it. And recently this year, we've had shortages of FSH, you know, and I think we're about to have another one. Maybe talk through kind of logistics of what you're seeing there and how, you know, producers can or clients can prepare if they need to worry, I guess.
So first of all, fulltropin is the only FDA approved product for this purpose. And what that means is, years ago, and it's been over 10 years since that's been approved, but before that there were multiple products. And so that was an insurance policy that if one product wasn't available, well, there was something else we could use. But because fulltropin is approved, now all the other products on the market have to become approved, or they can't be sold. And so essentially that hasn't happened yet. There are other products that are in the FDA approval process, but to this point, fulltropin is the one that we can use legally. And so that's what we use. And so we have had some challenges with availability of the product. And like you said, we're a bit at the mercy of Vetiquinol, which is the company that supplies fulltropin. They've had some challenges with their production process. This is a pituitary derived from porcine product. They've had some challenges with their production. And so what that means is supply has been a challenge at times. And so the good thing for Transova clients is we're a pretty big client of theirs. We buy quite a bit of product and then sell to our clients. So we do have some supply in our facilities, but we have some pretty big challenges there too, that we're going to have to really be conservative. And so our approach is going to be to try our best to conserve at every point in order to make sure that as many of our clients can get access to FSH as possible. And so it looks like we're going to have a little bit of a challenge here through February of 2024. And then hopefully after that, we'll get a pretty good supply going again.
I just want to maybe add the clarification, or maybe you can talk about it, Cody, but we will not just send FSH out to anybody. We are preserving kind of that right for clients of Transova. I know I clarify that only because I know I got that question during the last shortage was, hey, can you hook me up? And the answer is only if you're a client. So I don't, you know, we're doing our best to make sure that clients get what they need, you know, during kind of those times and help navigate that situation.
Correct. Yeah. And even we're being conservative, you know, about how much we're sending out. We're trying to make sure that it's going to be used up in the next month or so, that we have procedures scheduled on the docket that are going to get done in the next month. And like I said, we will be likely pushing to try to utilize NoSTIM, which we believe in. So, you know, we have data to support it in certain classes of cattle with NoSTIM and certainly reducing dose. And we feel that that works anyway. So we're not doing something to really compromise results. We believe that this is the best approach anyhow. So, but we're just going to be really cognizant of trying to conserve the FSH that we have here until the supply gets better.
Awesome. Cody, before we wrap, is there anything that you'd like to add that maybe we didn't ask you or, you know, anything you want to throw in to add on to any of your answers?
You know, as you begin doing OPUs, and even if you're a recurring client that you've done in the past, have that conversation with your CSR or your team doing the collections about what the goals are. Even individual donors, what are the goals in this time frame of her productive life, and that'll help us tailor make a program for you with utilizing stimulation or not, utilizing different programs and different sync schedules for that donor. And so, and I think really considering you know, the cost per embryo, cost per live calf, there is some slight advantages to FSH in certain donors, but a lot of donors, we start them with NoSTIM and they do really well. And if it's not broke, we don't fix it. And so I think that's the right approach. And so, but the more communication we can have, the better. And even after we start a donor on a certain schedule, it's your donor. So be an advocate for your own donor and reach out and say, hey, what do you think about this? And a lot of times, sometimes we'll come back and say, based on my experience, I think we're doing the right thing. But sometimes I've had clients say, hey, what do you think about, we've been stimulating this donor for 3 or 4 times and here's our results. What do you think about jumping to a NoSTIM? I'm willing to give it a shot and have those conversations with clients. And so reach out and have those conversations. I think that's the best for you and your donor.
Very good. Or not give it a shot, right?
Right.
Literally, exactly. Pun intended.
Yep, absolutely.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Cody, for all of your knowledge and expertise on the subject. We've appreciated having you on today. I know it's a topic that comes up quite frequently, and I think you did a great job of pointing out that conversation even starts before your donor's on the schedule. And so it's just an important thing to drive home that there's a lot of people on hashtag Team Transova that can serve as a resource on the topic, and Cody would be certainly one of them. So we'll probably link maybe some information for Cody if you have further questions on the topic.
You bet. Appreciate it. And always willing to help and have a conversation.
Sounds great. Well, thank you, Cody, again. We appreciate it. And we'll see you on another episode of the Powered by Transova podcast.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.